Well, we are coming up to the 1st of June. What happens on the 1st of June if you got HECS or help debt? The government apply an indexation to the outstanding debt on that date. We start to get HECS and help questions around this time. And just to let everyone know, I will be doing a deep dive episode the second week of May on HECS and help debt. But one of the questions that people often ask is, well, should I just refinance the mortgage and pay down my help debt? Should I pay voluntarily extra onto this debt? How should we negotiate HECS or help debt when we've got other financial goals in our life? So we're going to talk about that today. Now, this episode is brought to you by Sphere Home Loans. Valuations of your property make a huge difference to your interest rate and what options you have with lenders. Valuations also change between lenders, so having a great mortgage broker is key to getting the best valuation done. I recently had a mortgage broker refinance my properties, and one valuation was, I think, $75,000 less than another valuation. Now, that's a lot of money, and particularly if you might be in a situation where you need to get under that 80% LVR, so you're not paying LMI, or once you get under that 80%, you really get the best shot at having the most appropriate interest rates. This stuff matters. So going to a broker, they can order a couple of valuations with different lenders, and they can form a view of what's most appropriate for you based on that data and your overall situation. You can search Sphere Home Loans anywhere online or click the link in the show notes and they'll be happy to help wherever you are. My name's Glenn James. I'm joined by Rebecca Pritchard today, and this is Money.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Rebecca Pritchard, financial advisor, Rising Tide. Welcome back to the Tuesday show.
Thank you for having me, Glenn. It is wonderful to be back.
It really is. Now, just a shout out, we're recording in a co-working space, so you might hear some footsteps behind, you might hear some chatter, you might hear some inappropriate office jokes and laughter from this co-working space.
Bit of hustle bustle in the background.
Mm.
Keeps it interesting.
Yeah. So if you do hear that, that's all good. We're just having a chat. Now, I want to start this question here. I got an email and we'll keep this anonymous. And I wrote back to the person saying, hey, we'll talk about this on the Tuesday show. Hi, Glenn and team. I find myself in a situation where I've been off work due to breast cancer and mental health issues. During this time, I've received some financial support from DVA, and that's the Department of Veteran Affairs. So thank you for your service if you've been an active member, and we appreciate you. And that will continue for as long as I am medically unable to work, basically. Similar to a disability pension, but not necessarily ongoing. I am no longer contributing to super during this period. My question is, if I remain on this support for a significant period or don't return to work, how can I ensure my super grows still that will be enough to support me in my old age? Should I be making my own non-concessional contributions or building a kitty outside of super or both? I'm not sure who is best to seek advice from as my situation is not particularly normal. Is this something a financial advisor would be able to provide advice on? I feel so lost and fearful of mismanaging my financial situation for my financial future. Now, I wrote back to Anonymous and said, hey, we'll have a look. We'll chat about this anonymously on the podcast next Tuesday. Anonymous wrote back, thank you, Glenn. I'll stay tuned for the podcast. I would also like to get into my numbers with someone and was hoping you may know who I could speak to. So here's some further information about this, Bec, which I think really helps us talk about this. I'm about to turn 48, have no insurances within or outside of super, was declined insurance when I changed super companies. I have no access to credit, only having just completed, and they say they're divorced recently, bankruptcy in 2019 to 22. But I own my unit outright due to a recent DVA permanent impairment payout. My car is quite old, 2003, and I may need to have that replaced soon. I also have two super accounts, a defined benefit that can be accessed at age 55, approximate value 200K, and Host Plus Super of around 300K, which is not accessible until age 60, of course. My head is spinning. Any assistance is greatly appreciated. I need a numbers nerd. There's a lot going on there, and I kind of just wanted to first pause and say to Anonymous, looking in from 10,000 feet at your financial situation, I'm not having financial anxiety. Just looking at you're 48, you own your unit, awesome. You're 48, you've got 300K in super, awesome. You've got a pension, a defined benefit scheme worth about $200,000, awesome. So I just want to just firstly, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, remove any financial anxiety from Anonymous.
Yep. And it's a bit of a plot spoiler to the end point, which is there are a lot of moving pieces here, but, you know, relative to how much it costs you to live and what support you might need, there's also a lot of pieces on the table that you can use. And we're not stressing out about this. It's simply a matter of getting the pieces of the Tetris game to come together.
Totally. So what are you telling Anonymous in this first instance?
Well, firstly, I think it's worth acknowledging that when you do have that many pieces moving around, it's very understandable that your head is spinning, while simultaneously addressing what we just said, which is there's also a lot of wealth that's actually been accumulated here for various reasons. And if you looked at those numbers for a different situation, you might be like, actually, this looks pretty good for a 48-year-old.
Totally. So I want to address, firstly, the super thing. I don't want Anonymous to worry about adding any more money to super right now.
Agreed.
We need to make sure your income, wherever that's coming from, meets your needs.
Yep. And particularly when you've got health concerns right now.
Yep.
Making sure you're looking after yourself on a day-to-day basis.
Now, I don't know the answer to this. I've just Googled DVA pension. So I'm just having a look here.
It can be quite complex.
Yes.
There's a lot of nuance in this space.
So single rates, because I don't think they have, do they have homeowner or not? Disability, compensation, payment rates. Man, you're right, there is so much here. But I would like to hope that with Anonymous owning her unit, that she is at least surviving financially. Now, there's a difference with going backwards, surviving, and thriving, thriving. I would expect and hope that she could make her limited income work for now.
Agreed. And when you take housing security out of the equation for at least the foreseeable future, it does certainly take the pressure off your income in terms of where it needs to go. And so Anonymous can then use that weekly, fortnightly, monthly income to not have to worry about putting a roof over her head, but medical support, any ancillary health services, cost of living, day-to-day stuff, and finding her rhythm, because, you know, looking after her well-being in a whole different sort of host of ways right now. When you've got breast cancer, you've got mental health issues, you've clearly got some changes in circumstances with your work over the years. So making sure that you're looking after yourself just gives the most amount of wiggle room, and the financial position that they are in certainly takes the pressure off making contributions to super for at least the next little while.
Yeah, and I think the fact that she said that should I add more to super, to me means that she is meeting her needs and there might be some money left over.
Yep.
So, yeah, so ordinarily in these situations and any situation, we need people to have an emergency fund or a little cash buffer. Now, if you do have surplus money left over, sure, we're building a little kitty and we're not committing any money to anything major.
Or locking it away, because you're not losing it by putting in super, you're simply deferring your access. But particularly when there are so many moving pieces, I want access to that.
That's right. And at least until you're in the clear medically, and this is kind of And it is so nuanced, but if, for example, a disability support pension or some disability pension ceased, somewhere on paper, there's a call and doctors, usually a couple of doctors, have signed off and said, we believe this person can resume work. Now, that can be a tough pill to swallow because you might not be able to go back to the work you were doing, but physically or mentally, you can work.
You are. It's talking about your ability.
That's right. So in a couple of years, if the pension payment from Department of Veteran Affairs ceased, the question is, what do you want to do when you grow up as a job and career? Now, again, I'm collecting all the mental health issues, so I've been in these situations and I manage it ongoing. Thinking about the future when you're in a hell at the moment is very hard. And that's why I just want, in this situation, financially, don't worry about future you financially because you're super fine. You've got that other pension there.
You own your own home.
You own your own home. I need you to almost live weekly, mentally and emotionally. And as you start to work through the mental health stuff, and if there are the physical things and the breast cancer, you know, the survival rate for breast cancer, I've got a friend who's going through it at the moment. I said to her husband, I'm like, mate, there is over a 90% chance. Like, they got it early and all that. Like, she's not dying. And so within all that, it's a long road, but don't stress about future you financially, because once you are physically and mentally healthy, so you're 48 now, you might be 52 when it's all out of the clear. What did you want to do as a teenager for your job? What do you like to do? Because the financial pressure isn't as savage when you own your own home. And if you are having a bit of a kitty saved, you might have, if they stop the pension, you may have been fortunate enough to save kitty to support your expenses for 12 months.
Meanwhile, the superannuation is going to continue to compound in the background. So certainly one thing that I would be looking to do for this person is check that they're invested appropriately in super. So they're not paying any more fees and charges than necessary. Just make sure, you know, a bit of a hygiene check in that environment. That's likely to be far more effective than worrying about putting any further contributions. Just make sure that's in tip-top shape. And as you said, then go keep your focus really near and simply focus on that day-to-day, week-to-week stuff.
So there's a couple of things just to take some further financial stress away. I've just put $300,000 into a compound calculator. I've put regular deposits at zero. I've put the number of years, so 12 years, just to age 60, okay? And I put the annual interest rate at 4.5%. So I factored in some inflation, I factored in some fees or tax, so pretty conservative. In 12 years, the super account should be around $514,000.
In combination with a defined benefit scheme, in combination with not having to pay for housing, that is looking nice.
Yes. Now, and this is, so saying all that, this is the juicy thing that I want to talk to you about. And I might actually see, Anonymous, if you just want to reply to my email or reach out to Financial Edge Group, Martin hosts the Retirite podcast, because there might be an advice piece here. Because what I'm thinking, the only thing I think about here, right, is Anonymous basically got TPD claim, if you will, and paid the house off or bought the house. On paper, Anonymous may satisfy a condition of release for that $300,000 super, okay? Now, in 5 years' time, and this is kind of the catch-22 of it all, right? If in 5 years' time they're fit and healthy mentally and physically, they probably wouldn't qualify for a TPD payment from super because you're fit and healthy, there's no issues. But then again, in 5 years' time, you can work anyway. Now, this is where it's...
You're making me nervous with where you're going.
Yeah, I know, and I'm making myself nervous. So the question is, do you grab that money now Rebecca's shaking her head. Just say no.
No.
Well, this is why we don't know the whole situation. Do you grab that money now and hedge your bet, take 150 out, half of it out in your own name, invest it in your own name or whatever, recontribute 150 back into super? I don't know. I'm erring on the side of no, because you're fine financially. It's just, how do we... Go on. Have a go at me.
I'm not having a go at you. That point you just made, if you're fine financially right now, and it sounds from what we're reading that Anonymous is. Mm. If that wasn't the case, I would be nodding along with you instead of staring at you in a very firm way. Mm. So if we work on the assumption that there actually is several years in front, like perhaps 10, 20, 30 years in front, you know, I always want people to get out of their own way.
Totally.
And this is absolutely no reflection of Anonymous, that this is more a reflection of my faith in humanity and human behavior. We don't make great decisions when it comes to long-term planning.
Don't look me in the eye when you're saying this.
So removing the ability to stuff it up is almost always a good call. Look, if life expectancy changed, 100%. I'm with you. Like, let's take the money, enjoy it, just do what we can.
Yeah.
But in the absence of that.
And that's kind of where it's this, because I've been thinking about this for a couple of days. It's that circular logic of, well, if you medically can't work due to mental health or and the thing is, the breast cancer potentially wouldn't allow a doctor to sign off saying you can't work.
No. And this is the rationale for why the average person would have trauma insurance and income protection at the same time, because sometimes they overlap, but
that's
often
right.
They don't.
That's right. So, like, my friend's wife diagnosed with breast cancer, that's fine.
It's like you had breast cancer yesterday and you still worked, so.
Yeah, that's right. There's no income protection in the world that would kick in to fund that until you're physically unable to work. And this is the thing, everyone. You don't want to get that bad where you can't get income protection, because it means your health isn't great. So as long as Anonymous is, by definition, unable to work and meets the DVA criteria for that pension, money's not an issue. And that's – if they do stop that, well, probably you may be competent and confident enough on paper to get a job. Now, that's a hard pill to swallow – if you might be in your early 50s and you've just had all this disruption. I've been on a disability pension for years. I don't feel like I'm confident to get a job. I don't feel qualified anymore. That's a whole other discussion. But the facts of the matter are, in this situation, I just want to take all financial stress away from Anonymous. Keep money in your own name. Get through this storm.
Lower your eyes and think about what is immediately in front of you. And I often talk to clients about this, to say, like, a lot of people don't think about the future, but they absolutely need to. And for clients who are being really diligent, or anyone who has an astute money management plan, it's like you earn the right not to think about your future or to take your eye off it or your foot off the pedal. In Anonymous's case, you know, the work that they have done and where their situation has evolved, they can lower their eyes. That's
totally.
Okay. You have earned the right to take a minute and focus on the near term.
Totally. And just for those wondering where I got 4.5 from, I'll just tell you my workings. I did 4.5% plus 2.5, which is the average inflation. It gives us the 7%. And then basically, you know, to get to that 8% that I was kind of thinking, I just allowed 1% for fees or tax in super environment. And this is not a perfect science, but I think with financial projections, you really need to be very conservative.
Yep.
Because if Anonymous gets to age 60 and there's $310,000, well, we've done something wrong. But if we get to age 60 and, Glenn said the calculator said 514, but I've got 600, that's a good problem to have, being conservative with
your
projections. All right. I want to now talk about HEX and HELP.
Does anyone actually say help, or do we all just use the word HECS as a synonymous for education debt?
Yeah, I'm trying to be politically correct. I'm trying to be help PC, but a lot of people still say HECS, but it's actually help debt.
And it changed to help so long ago, and we still all say HECS.
But I saw someone like online the other day, they were like 21 or 2, and they're like, I just got my blacks. Like off their pay, and this is New South Wales, and getting your blacks was off your P plates, getting your full license. In my lifetime, it's never been black. So unless there was a, I've got to ask someone, if you're over a million years old and you live in New South Wales, was it ever, like, why do they say blacks? And I think this is this folklore verbiage and wording that goes through the society based on nothing.
Yeah, I'm feeling 100 right now.
HECS versus mortgage, what would you do?
Juicy one.
All right, Katie, you're up. Hi, everyone. Long-time lurker, not a poster. Scandal. I used the search function to find out if my question has already been answered, but I haven't had much luck. Thank you, Katie, for using the search function and aka your brain. And I've just insulted everyone. But
it's so refreshing. For anyone who has been in a group or a massive group, there is, what, at least once a week you're rolling your eyes going, come on, someone has asked this before.
It's fine. Is there a calculator out there that can help me make my decision to either pay my HECS off or put against my mortgage? I welcome your ideas. Recently, I bought my own apartment following a separation and a house sale. My mortgage on an interest rate is 6.43. I got 33 grand left on HECS, got enough leftover cash to pay this up front, or I could have it sitting in my redraw account against my mortgage. I still have funds left over, so I'm not dipping into emergency funds or anything. Sounds like you're in a good financial position. My HECS repayments are about $740 a month, so that's extra cash flow I'd gain. Is there a calculator? Any thoughts? Any insights? Blah, 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 blah. Do you want to maybe give me a sermon on the mount about your experience with HECS and help debt in your own life? You're doing some study at the moment. What are you doing there? Just, I don't know. If Katie was a client of yours, because you look after a lot of, I guess, millennial, Gen X type vibe clients.
And I've been around the block a couple of times on this one, so I'm going to zoom out and talk about the last decade on approaching conversations like this more so than the last 12 months, because the last 12 months are odd. So generally speaking, you know, when we think about HECS/help, it is a very cheap debt to have. And the reason for that is because it is indexed, linked to inflation once a year. Also, the other thing to consider is for a lot of the people that I work with, they're on the up and up when it comes to their career. So as they move through their career, they are naturally paying off their help debt at an increasing rate, because as your income steps up, the proportion that you put towards help will increase as well. So general rule of thumb that we would use is that in the absence of you lying awake at night worrying about your HECS or help, because it, you know, is a thorn in your side, we wouldn't make extra repayments. In recent years, with the increase in inflation and the increase in interest rates, which is squash borrowing capacity, we're having more and more conversations about the power of paying off HECS as a way to free up cash flow and borrowing capacity. But as I said, that's very recent. So it's interesting to sort of zoom out and zoom in simultaneously on this, because you can look at it through two very different lenses. Now, you mentioned I have recently, well, in the last 18 months, returned to student life. And I have elected to pay as I go. I did do the maths to work out that from a weekly sort of deduction from my salary versus paying as you go across the course of the year, it would flush out about the same. But I mentioned before about borrowing capacity, and this year I'm intending to borrow for to build a house. So this is very pertinent for me. And so I had to very strategically say, I am going to pay as I go, rather than slapping it onto help, because it was going to bite me in the bum for another goal.
With servicing.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So what I did, and I was a little bit surprised myself with this calculation.
And by surprise, Katie, we mean Glenn is very pleased with himself in terms of how he has devised this calculation.
Well,
and he is excited to run you through it.
It's just very interesting.
It's interesting.
Now, yeah, there's a couple of things here and we'll get to it. But what I did, every time you do these calculations, you've got to use assumptions, okay? So what I did was I put a loan amount of $40,000 into a repayment calculator and I just did a loan term of 10 years, okay? $40,000, 10 years. I put the interest rate being 6.5%, which is basically Katie's home loan, okay? Then what I did, I selected compounding daily, so the interest compounding daily, and then I did pay it back every month.
So what you've done there is you're replicating the conditions of a mortgage, which is interest compounds daily and you make a repayment each month.
Yeah, and it's obviously P&I for this. And then what I did, I kind of did the A-B test, and the second loan thingy that I did was I did the $40,000, 10 years, 6.5% interest rate, but I tried to replicate the actual help indexation vibe.
Yep.
Just to give an example. And we did compounding annually and payback every year.
Because that is, in fact, what happens. So even though you are making an effective repayment each fortnight, month, whatever your wage or income frequency is, it actually is only applied to your HEC step once a year when you do your tax return.
Yep.
And the ATO, it's the ATO, right? They're having the fun with this. They're doing that indexation one day a year as well. So it's considerably more dramatic than the mortgage situation.
Mm. Yeah. So the wash up is over the 10-year period, the first example where it was repayments every month compounding daily, you'd pay $14,500 interest, okay? Now, the example of compounding yearly, paying it yearly on the same amount, the interest was $15,500. So an extra $1,000.
But in this regard, are we paying the interest or are we saving the interest?
Well,
so is higher better or worse?
Well, I think when it comes to money, more is more. And when it comes to interest payments, less is more.
It's just good to clarify, make sure we're all on the same page with this.
Yes, that's right. So we are paying the interest. So we, with this scenario, it would be considered better financially if the HEC and HELP indexation rate was the same as your mortgage, you would theoretically just transfer it over to the mortgage, but you wouldn't.
So this is where we start moving away from calculators and we start considering
real life.
Real life.
So a couple of things, and this is probably just my Sermon on the Mount when it comes to HEC and HELP.
I thought you were going to say how to life.
How to life. No, that's you can find that in the book of Matthew. But what I want to really kind of discuss is the discussion with this HEC and HELP stuff, this is just the way that the government have set it up. It's a tax on education. If you do higher learning and you use the HEC and HELP scheme, it's a tax on education, like as simple as that. Now, we're not talking about the discussions that you see on online forums that a million years ago, my parents went to university, the government paid for it. Like, we're not talking about societal.
We've all sat next to that uncle at Christmas.
Yeah.
Let's keep moving.
Yeah. So it's like, that's fine. It's not that discussion. It's not a discussion even about the indexation rate, because we know that the indexation rate over the last 10 or 11 years, with the exception of 2023, is less than any private debt that you could get to fund that. So the discussion is the indexation methodology that the ATO use fair? I don't know. It was fair in 2021 when people's HEC and HELP was indexing 0.6%. Wasn't much whinging going on.
I did not hear any complaints that year.
It was fair in 2020 and 2019 and 2018 when it was 1.8, 1.9, 2017, 1.5%. It was fair in 2015 when it was 2.1%. It was fair in 2014 when it was 2.6%. It was fair in 2013 when it was 2%. Now, we had a spike last year of 7%. If you've had HEX and HELP over the last 10 years, you're still ahead. So there's that. Now, this year, probably going to be around 4.5%-ish.
Mm-hmm.
4.1 to 4.8, okay? We'll find out soon. So the when we go back to the question of do I put my own money into it from my mortgage or refinance the mortgage and clear the HELP debt? Well, the answer, I think, is no. However, you can actually do whatever you want to do financially as long as you understand the consequences and the trade-offs. I had a friend who inherited money from their grandma. This friend had a house with a mortgage, had good cash savings, was a professional, had the emergency fund, life was pretty good. Nan, $40,000 inheritance to each grandchild. I'm going to clean up my HEX and HELP debt. Done. Awesome. Get on with your life.
Yep.
My friend wanted to. I went through all the scenarios. And being a smart person, and if you were a smart person and you're listening to our podcasts, we want to inform you enough to make your own decision.
And particularly in Katie's situation, as she has rightly pointed out, paying off HEX will release cash flow, which is potentially really valuable depending on her goals and her objectives. Depending on her relationship with money, how likely money is to go walkabouts or be sort of spent on something that is shinier, you know, that could impact the way that, you know, the defensive nature of how you want to allocate your money. So I wholeheartedly agree. There's not a right or wrong answer here. There are different trade-offs. And the setup that she's shared so far, sounds like she's got her basics covered. Mm. Which is a lovely position to be making robust financial decisions on because, you know, your head's not on the chopping block. You're not under pressure or duress. So great, let's start thinking about those other criteria. Let's start thinking about other goals and allow that to help shape your decision.
And this is where personal finance is personal and all the textbook right way to do things, guess what, are in the textbooks. My wrist surgeon said to me once when I had my carpal tunnel, get this, nerve conduction study was clear, tick. MRI, clear, tick. Ultrasound, clear, tick. Going to his office, he does some physical tests. He goes, you've got carpal tunnel. We can release that and sort it out. And he goes, and this is not a textbook case. They belong in the textbook. And it's just a really good way to think about, you know, for me, if I had a pile of cash over here that if I allocated it to a separate pot would allow me to get an extra $700 a month is cash flow, psychologically or whatever, the psychology of that is like, I'm going to do some housekeeping and clear that up and get it in my life.
Particularly if there's nothing else that is screaming out for it.
Yeah. So I kind of say, when wouldn't you pay down your HEX and HELP debt? So we reverse engineer this and it's the same category. When wouldn't you salary sacrifice extra to superannuation? So let's go through. You don't have an emergency fund.
Yeah.
You don't have consumer debt.
Yep.
Or you do, sorry. Yeah. You don't have an emergency fund. You have consumer debt. Yep. I'm reverse engineering my own thing.
it's a bit doom and gloom, but you're not expecting to be around in a few years' time, like your health isn't great. Life expectancy isn't there.
Yep. You might not have your insurance set up. So you want to make sure you've got the cash flow to fund that. You want to maybe look at some other short-term financial goals. I want to save for a house.
Yep.
So I'm not going to pay my HEX off. Well, there's a carve out there, but I'm not going to salary sacrifice the super. I want to save $50,000 so I can go on a 3-month trip around the world.
Let's put unexpected pregnancies in there.
Let's you throw know, that in there.
You're on the clock on that in terms of pulling cash together.
So I think it is more about when wouldn't you? So if you tick all these boxes, I've done my sound financial house, I've met some of my current lifestyle goals, I'm relatively on track with my finances, I've got spare cash. I might do some housekeeping now.
Yep.
So it's a housekeeping exercise.
Yeah. So we were talking about this earlier over a lovely sandwich around also the way it works in Australia. As we stand, if you have a help debt and you pass away, your debt dies with you. So Glenn, how does that impact decision making when it comes to clearing help?
Yeah. So if you were in a, well, anyone really, if I had, just a really easy scenario. I had 100 grand in super, I had a mortgage of $500,000, and I had the house was worth $1 million, okay? And then I had 50 grand hex debt, and I had 50 grand in my bank account. If I took that $50,000 and cleared the hex help debt today, gone, and died the next day, my estate loses that $50,000. Now, that's a one percenter, might not happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got a young family and you're trying to, you know, look after them, if you put that $50,000 onto your mortgage, that's equity. And if you died the next day, the estate and your family wouldn't lose that $50,000. So that's another way to look at it.
Yep. And it's really interesting because often when we're thinking about this, because there's no clean financial answer, because different strategies can be right for different reasons, sometimes those more alternative ways of looking at things are really useful, because it can, you know, it can push you to one side of the fence or another.
Totally. So the answer to this is understand the lay of the land, do what you want with an informed decision, with confidence, and tell everyone else to shut up. But I want to go to an ad break now. Before I do, if you're whinging about the indexation rate last year of 7.1% and you're whinging about this year of the indexation rate of 4.5%, please show me your Facebook rant, your Facebook post whinging about the indexation rate in 2021, 2020, 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016, 2015, 2014, 2013. Show me where you were whinging about the 1.5% indexation rate. We'll take that as a comment. We'll be back right after this.
What about the poor 20-year-old who didn't have hex at that point? They're the ones who are going
to
be
okay,
like...
Okay, that's right. We'll keep this in. We were about to go to a break and Rebecca just added that. And that's what I say. I say that if you were around then, but if you were like literally 2 years ago, got your hex and help debt, and then the first year rocking up was 7.1, and then this year it's 4.
You're allowed to be a bit pissy.
You can be pissed off, but just understand the long-term inflation target could be 2.5 to 3.5%.
It will come back around.
We know that's cheaper money over the long term than a mortgage rate. And before we go to the break, we really will at some point, would you rather a system in Australia? I certainly wouldn't, where the government privatized hex and help debt. Hell to the no. You end up with the US and A, and it's a debacle. Look, the structural stuff around hex and help debt in Australia, I don't control that. Write to your local member. But like, yeah, I understand if you have hex and help debt in the last 3 years, you might be a bit, but for all of you that have had help and hex debt the last 10 years, shut up. I still love you. Okay, go to an ad now. Thanks, Dave.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, now it is time for the community segment of the week, where we ask you in the Facebook group a heap of different questions and we read them out here on the podcast. This segment is brought to you by Sky Wealth. I'm a big believer that you need to protect the most important thing in your life, and that is your ability to earn. Or if you were to die, there is protection in place for your family. You can reach out to sky.com.au or just search Sky Wealth and have a chat to them today about getting your income protection sorted and your whole suite of insurances. Okay, we asked the Facebook group, do you enjoy talking about money with friends or family? Why/why not?
So Paul has said it's easier with friends than with family.
Jess said, absolutely not. I would be happy to if the outcomes were productive or positive. I found that it just results in awkwardness, jealousy, and judgment. This is interesting. So the team put these things in weeks in advance. Then I log into the schedule for today and put the questions. This is a kind of thing so like easier than with friends and family, and I'd only if the outcomes were productive or positive. With your decision to pay down your HEX and help debt, if you decide to do that, right, maybe don't worry about telling anyone that you did or you didn't.
You do you. So Bella said, I don't, but that's because my parents didn't. Not pointing the finger or placing blame, but I find discussing money such an awkward subject because it was such a taboo growing up. I understand the importance of it, but that took a lot of work.
Steve said, happy to talk about it to anyone. Once they start acting odd, I stop.
Steve, I'm with you. That's why this is my job. Karen has said, absolutely, with my husband. Well, good. But that doesn't seem like any of my friends are keen to. Somehow it's still a taboo topic in today's society.
Trish, easier with strangers than with friends and family. Either they are not interested, know little, or just thinks greedy.
So, interesting question for you, Glenn. When you are at a barbecue dinner party and you say what you do, do you find people come up to you with like all kinds of confessions of money things? Because
yeah.
I still find that fascinating when I tell someone I'm a financial planner.
Yeah, I just tell people I run a media business.
You're a media mogul.
Because I don't know. I hate talking about money and personal finance in a social setting because it's like I do it every day for work. But anyway, okay, housekeeping, all we're talking about at the moment is the Financially Fierce podcast hosted by Jess Brady. It is a separate podcast. If you're into money, if you're into a different vibe, if you're into a different view, Jess will help you shape your money mindset, learn how to invest, curb your bad spending habits, and become financially fierce. So she's a great financial advisor. We just want everyone, if you are interested in money content, you can listen to Financially Fierce. Secondly, Retire Right. It's the first big mainstream money podcast for those over age 50, 55 talking about retirement. So I want you to show your parents, show your grandparents, anyone in your life over age 50 or 55 looking to retire, the podcast Retire Right. It's hosted by Mark McGrath and I jump on and do the odd episode as well, but that's where a lot of my energy is going. Okay, let's bump out. Okay, Kim, I have three children inherited a big sum each, which they are entitled to once they turn 25. Kids are 14, 19, and 21. I'm thinking of putting the funds into a high interest term deposit account. Any suggestions of who to go with, how long I should put it, blah, 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 open to ideas. All right, what are you telling Kimbo?
Well, you know I like to talk general rules of thumb.
Mm.
If we're thinking about we want access to the money in 3 years, 100% I'm with you, Kim, high interest savings / term deposit. If access is more than 3 years away, then I would like to turn the conversation towards investing. So that's really going to be dictated by the age of the kids and how many years until they turn 25.
So this is interesting. I don't know if we've got enough to answer.
Well, these are just thought bubbles, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm thinking to putting the funds into a high interest term deposit account. I mean, realistically, 4 years for one of them, five for the other one. I'm more
six for the other one.
Sorry.
So we've got 4 years, yes, 6 years, and 9 years, yes, until each of these kids come of age.
So
your maths is terrible today.
It's just always terrible. It's just interesting because my three children have inherited a large sum once they're 25. It's, you got to read it as well. It's like two of my adult children have received an inheritance with a caveat on the money. So there is got to be, there has to be some type of thing where the trustee from the estate or something. Yeah, I don't know. I'm
not sure if it's a legal restriction or an emotional commitment that has been made.
Yes, thank you. Now, let's go with the emotional commitment because that's probably easier. If it's the emotional commitment, I'm taking the two adult children and we'll say a large inheritance. We'll go 200 grand each. Walking them into an advisor's office and be like, this is your client, this is your money, invest it for them.
What are your goals?
What are your goals? Blah, blah, blah. Like, as long as they don't get their dirty mitts on her for 6 years and 4 years, like, knock yourself out. And that's why, yeah, well, otherwise.
Purpose is really important. Intention, you know, to the extent that whoever the children have inherited from, have they provided guidance or a direction that could shape it? You know, the source of funds can be really important. Whether there's a lot of emotion attached to this or it was some random aunt in Scotland that you never met anyway, in which case you can be a bit more rational around it.
So I think what I may be doing in this situation is, and this is why if I was smart and if I was all the things, I would be an estate planning lawyer.
I think I was in a different life.
Yeah. So could you, for example, and I'm just literally talking shop, knowing enough to be dangerous, set up an investment as trustee for and name the three kids, okay? Just a run-of-the-mill investment account. But then again, can you be a trustee for an adult? This is the stuff I don't know. Maybe or can the estate set up an investment? Or I think what I'm getting at is, if it was 600 grand, throw it all in an ETF or something. We've got at least 4 years and kick it down the road.
Look, I say to people all the time, let's not use verbs like throw when it comes to our money. That's step one.
No, we've got to.
You know, my understanding is that if we are within the estate environment and there is a trustee involved, the trustee can do a fair amount of things.
Yeah.
If this is more of that emotional commitment, the money's actually come to Kim and now she is making decisions based off an intention that has been communicated to her, then Kim can do whatever she wants. What's really interesting for me is if I may zoom out a moment and think about families who are not Kim's and who are thinking about having some mechanisms like this in place for their own children or grandchildren, that there are actually some really cool investment structures that exist that allow you to rule beyond the grave and put mechanisms and restrictions in place around when people can access. So that could be age related. It could be to say that they can have lump sums versus, no more than 10% each year. And with those, we have seen an increasing trend in the last five or so years that the age in which people could access money is getting older and older. So, you know, I think two or three generations ago, you were considered an adult at the age of 16, whereas now, you know, 30 is like you're barely scratching that. So this is going to become a much more interesting topic of conversation more broadly, as wealth is looking to transfer from the boomers to the X's to the Y's, skipping over?
So I just brought up the Facebook question just to see if she had responded. Someone said, like, yeah, this whole trust thing and inheritance and all that stuff. Kim said, not sure why it was released into our bank account. It was transferred into each child's name, but no strings attached. So this could be a very social, non-binding note.
Mm. Well, if it's in the kid's name, particularly I'm looking at that youngest who is 14, and if we are talking about $100,000,
$200,000,
Oh. Hashtag general advice only. No, I'm actually thinking about interest on a sizable inheritance. With today's interest rates is going to run you into exceeding the threshold for income for a minor.
Totally.
And that is so ugly. So in terms of the priorities, I'd actually make sure you're tackling the youngest kid first.
Yes.
So that this doesn't bite you in the butt.
Yeah, so that's a good point. If it is a social thing, it's like, oh, give the three kids this amount. It's my intention that they can have it once they're 25. What I'm probably doing, absolutely, the 14-year-old, looking at something, particularly maybe like an investment bond, and it's in your name, Kim, and the 14-year-old is the beneficiary.
Well, investment bonds, you can put it in the child's name, but it still takes it out of their hands, so to speak, from an income tax perspective, which is probably one of the more pressing concerns here.
Yeah, but I think and again, I've been out of the weeds for so long. I had a client once, very similar situation. He had $500,000 that was for the child, the mum died, and it was for her once she turned over 25 or 30. We did an investment bond in his name with her as the beneficiary.
Yep.
So at least she couldn't access it.
Mm-hmm.
But if he died, the money would flow to her.
Yep. It's called a future event transfer.
Right. That's
so you could go either way. You can put it in your name with this future event in place at a set age with those ruling beyond the grave characteristics I mentioned. Or you can put it in the child's name. Again, you can still put the same restrictions.
Right,
so
right.
I would hazard a guess that an investment bond will be Kim's best friend.
Yeah.
Without any further information.
For the 14-year-old.
Particularly for the 14-year-old. The 19 and the 21-year-old are going to be more particular based off their goals and objectives.
But this is the thing. Like for the 19 and the 21-year-old, if it is for them, that's where like cost bases walk in the door. These are adults. I honestly think if it's a social thing, then it probably needs to be in their name and the income coming on their tax return to get that.
And they're going to need to be part of the decision-making process because they're adults.
And Kim can say it's like, this was your friggin' grandparents' money and he wanted you to have it after 25 years old, but it's going in your name now. You're not bloody touching it. And I'm holding the keys to the castle, but it's in your name, but you're just not touching the capital.
Look, it's very mixed messages, isn't it, from a parenting perspective?
Yeah.
So the phrasing I'd introduce here is what we call a financial apprenticeship.
Right.
So like let's say Kim is holding all the cards and pulling all the strings for the next few years. Let's say it is a couple hundred thousand dollars and we have it either growing a savings account or investing. And let's take the middle kid. So it's then invested for 6 years. It could be worth, if it's $200,000 now, it could be worth $350,000 in a handful of years.
Yeah.
And if you have not involved that child in the decision-making process and then they get a check that is bigger in 6 years' time, like I'm not convinced that that's going to lead to good outcomes. So introducing this idea of a financial apprenticeship to bring them along for the ride, involve them in the decision-making process. Yes, they don't have, you know, executive decision-making on this, but let them have a say. Let them learn as they go so that it doesn't come as a financial slap in the face. We all know what happens with lottery winners.
Yeah, baby.
Let's not have these kids be those people.
Yeah. So all that to say, that was fun. In the 3 minutes that you've got left, quick question regarding a second income from a job, second job income. Is there any way for me to work out how much I would be taxed on this? And whether it would be worth the extra hours per week.
Great question. So Claire, one of my favorite bookmarks on my computer is Pay Calculator. There is a mechanism in there to say around second income. Basically what you're saying on that second income is that you're not claiming the tax-free threshold. They're just jargon words that changes how much tax is withheld on that second income. And it will then tell you how much your income will change from where you are today versus adding in the extra hours. So I have a casual role on top of my salaried role as a financial planner. So I have done this for myself. In terms of whether it's worth it, that's going to be a personal decision as to, you know, what hits your bank account if you look at that and go, yep, I'll take it, or nah.
For me, there's this working class myth about I don't want to work extra overtime because I just get taxed more. That's a myth.
Yep.
Okay, and you've got to get rid of that vibe. It's just got nothing to do with
working it. Working more will always mean you get more.
Yes. So what you could do, for example, your second job, just assume half of it's going to tax and you might get 20%, 15% back at the end of the year.
It will wash out in terms of your end of year income tax return.
That's right, because your whole income tax return is a big funnel. Everything goes in the top, and at the bottom, total income earned from five different jobs equals total tax due. We know that the first job didn't take the first 18, 19 grand, and the second two did, just so you don't have a bill at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So it's a funnel. It all comes out in the wash. I just wanted to say as a PSA, there's this, and I hear it come up from time to time, this old working class, don't do extra shifts and do overtime because I'm just working for the government.
I don't want to go off a tax threshold because I'm going to pay more.
Yeah, it's just rubbish and wrong. So we will leave it there this week. Thanks for letting me offend everyone. It's been fantastic. And Beck, we'll have you on again because we've got some other stuff that we need to tackle.
So many things to discuss, Glenn. Thank you for having me today.
Rebecca Pritchard, Rising Tide Financial, and Glenny J coming at you. Hey, if you found this provocative, interesting, thoughtful, kind, rude, feel free to forward it to someone. And if you enjoyed the show, please give us a little review wherever you're listening to this. Bye.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. If you are interested in furthering your education around money, your career or property, we have three books that might help. Check out Sort Your Money Out, Sort Your Career Out and Sort Your Property Out. Find these wherever good books are sold or via the link in the podcast show notes. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.